Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Welcome to Hollywood and Levine, episode 94. I am Ken Levine, your podcast host, and this is part two of my interview with Neil Ross. He is a voiceover guy, a cartoon voice guy, a narrator for Nova. He is also the voice of live events like the Emmys and the Oscars. It is a very specialized field with lots and lots of people trying to break in, but you can make a lot of money if you finally do. I mean, he's got a huge house. Anyway, part one was last week. We talked about radio. If you haven't heard it, after you listen to this week, go back and check that out. This week, we will hear how Neil made the transition from radio to television. And first, I want to give you a sample of what he sounds like. So this is his commercial demo. And then part two, my talk with Neil Ross on Hollywood and Levine.
There are a lot of maybes in life. Some are really fun to think about. Like the maybe I'll win the Super Lotto Plus jackpot, maybe. Super Lotto Plus. It's your dream. Play it.
The finest Hoover upright, the wind tunnel, has just gotten its second wind.
A new medical frontier is opening, using the same DNA technology as forensic science, enabling you to change your lifestyle habits and help reduce that risk of disease.
In the Lexus ES300, there are over 96 systems and components specifically designed to isolate vibrations. Chamonix is more than a place. It's an attitude. Budweiser. Brewery fresh taste. Strictly enforced.
Great cheese comes from happy cows. Happy cows come from California.
They come from beyond cyberspace. A viral nightmare turning computers into slaves.
All right, fourth and goal. They've broken the huddle. Spar stepping up to the line, set back in motion. Here's the snap.
He drops back under pressure, scrambling. Spar's flushed out of the pocket. He's got a receiver in the corner of the end zone. Here's the throw.
Snickers play for peanuts. Eat Snickers, win money. And players are not responsible for prizes.
Another rollback saves the day by saving you even more. Walmart, always low prices, always.
Example policy is Lincoln GTO 10-year preferred best policy form LBT 100 series issued by the Lincoln National Life Insurance Company, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Rates increase annually after the initial 10-year guarantee period to age 95. Products and features are subject to state availability. Not available in Florida, Hawaii, South Dakota, and New York. LLA 0407-0596.
Well, I always said about radio that the only way I could get respect in radio was to get out of it. And yeah, you sort of followed the same path. We obviously went in different directions. Yeah. But talk a little bit about your transition from being a disc jockey to being a voiceover guy.
Well, it's try to hone it down. I had always fooled around with voices and accents. But in the context of being a disc jockey, it never quite seemed to work. And periodically, people in positions of authority would sidle up to me in the hallway and say something like,
geez, I love those little voices you do. You know, you do those little voices that really makes me laugh. Could you do me a favor?
Yeah, what's that?
Don't do that anymore.
I got shut up and play the records. You're not funny. I got that all the time.
The only success I seemed to really have in radio was in the production studio, where I made commercials and promos, and people unreservedly were thrilled with the stuff I would come up with. And I found myself becoming curious about the people who were voicing national television commercials, the people who were voicing national radio commercials that came into the station from the big agencies in L.A. and New York, and the people doing cartoon voices, and the people narrating documentaries. I thought, who are these people, as Seinfeld would say? And I developed a theory, well, maybe they're on-camera people who do this on the side, which I'm sure some of them were.
Well, now you do have a lot of that.
Oh, yeah.
Not back then, though.
Well, yeah, not really. But anyway, in 1970, I discovered this business called voiceovers existed. And the second I discovered that, I thought, this is really where I belong. If I sat down and tried to think of a perfect job for me, it would be voiceovers.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to figure a way to get in this business now that I know it exists. And it took me another 10 years to get off my lazy duff and do anything about it, but I finally did. And I felt like, wow, yeah, this is where I should be. It's as though I compare disc jockey work is like driving a cab. Voiceovers is like driving in the Indy 500, as far as I'm concerned. Both jobs involve driving. But other than that, they're very different.
So being a track announcer is what? That's a Lyft driver? What would that be?
I don't know what
be?
The hell
a
that
rickshaw
would be.
Guy?
Yeah.
It's very hard, from what I understand, especially for radio guys to make the transition, because the last thing they want is a radio announcer.
Well, there's a radio read. The late, much revered Dawes Butler, who was a very famous voice actor, mm-hmm. he called it the cosmetic read. It began to, well, there used to be a ton of live copy in radio, and then a generation who hadn't paid attention in English class showed up, and they couldn't read the live copy, so more and more of it got pre-recorded. But you still did a fair amount of it, and you just, I guess, to survive, you develop this read that is smoothly professional, and everybody says, boy, that really sounds good, but is it believable? Not a bit. Because it's a radio read, and I can be reading this piece of copy, and it sounds just fine, and I'm thinking, now I get out of this dump about 6, I'll go over to Bob's Big Boy, and then I'll call so-and-so, and meanwhile, you're reading this thing.
Right, and the listener thinks, you know, it just sounds fine. You have no idea what you're reading. Yes, and I know that well.
The people that make commercials, that is the last thing they want. They want someone who sounds not like an announcer. They want someone, to a greater or lesser degree, who sounds like a real person imparting important information to a close, trusted friend.
Communicating again, one-to-one.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And after years and years of doing it like this, it's very difficult for radio guys to make the turn. I was just at a luncheon, and I talked to a longtime disc jockey. He's finally retired, but I mean, what a wonderful radio career. He said, oh, I tried that stuff. I went to one of those workshops, and they said, you sound like an announcer. And I said, well, I don't know what the hell I'm supposed to do about that. So I dropped out, and I thought, well, you know, you can't get into voiceovers because you think it'll be fun and you'll make a lot of money. You have to almost be called by it, I think. Which is, I was. To me, it was, I felt every bit as much passion as I had felt 20 years earlier when I started to get into radio. It was like I lived it and breathed it. It wasn't just a way to make a fast buck.
Well, there's no fast bucks to make because, number one, it's really hard to break into. Number two, you really do have to put in the time and effort and workshops. And so you did for a number of years, which in a way is kind of humbling when you're a major market disc jockey. And at the time, you were at KMPC Los Angeles, which was a huge major radio station. And yet you're, you know, the newbie when it came to that.
It was a strange period. You're putting it exactly right. In the radio station, I'm a grizzled old veteran, and then when I went out in the street to do voiceovers, and in those days, it was a lot of the big, successful talents were older. Not like now. Most of the successful guys were in their 50s and 60s, so to them, I was this new kid who was just starting, the kid who was 38 at the time, but that was young in those days for voiceovers, and Yeah, I remember the first time somebody suggested I do a workshop, driving home on the freeway and alternating between the hell with him, what does he know? I'm a major market disc jockey, and then, come on, who are you kidding? If you really want to do this, you've got to humble yourself and go back to being a beginner. Essentially, reinvent yourself. And I'm very glad that when I finally got home and pulled into the driveway, I had decided to take the workshop and do whatever I had to do.
Did you take acting classes, too?
I did take one acting class. I was horrible at it. But I did learn a little something from it. And then I took a number of animation workshops, which is acting of a sort. And I don't mean that in a patronizing way. I was just talking to my daughter last night, and she was talking about some show she saw where they had used celebrities. And she said, you know, Dad, I can hear the pros in the background. They have small parts. Mm-hmm. But these people, it's just not working. And I said, it's because it's a little bit of a different animal. These are on-camera people. They're used to so much of their body and their face doing the work.
Right.
And now they're in a situation where all they can hear is that voice. And you have to bring a little something extra to it. And you don't just walk into a studio and know how to do that. I would tell any celebrity, George Clooney on down, you really want to do animation, take a workshop. Maybe private, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But get with somebody good and do your homework. It's similar to if you're a stage actor and suddenly you're trying to do a movie or a television show. There are just certain little tweaks
that
you need
big,
to be aware of.
Big difference between having a camera 7 inches from your nose and having to project to the back of the music center.
The acting class that I took, one of the valuable moments was we had an older guy in there. I don't know why he was taking a class. Well, he was one of these dedicated actors who never stops trying to learn.
Mm-hmm.
But he was very, very accomplished. And the teacher said, I want to show you folks something. So he said, George, would you mind sitting in a chair and doing the monologue? He says, all right, first shot out of the box, do it stage. And he did a stage performance.
Right.
Now do a movie performance of this monologue. And it went down about 50%. And he said, do television. Uh-huh. Went down about 50%. He said, now do major motion picture close up. We could barely hear him.
Uh-huh.
And his facial expressions were almost invisible to us in the seats. But I guarantee you, if there'd been a Panavision camera on him, it would have been marvelous. And I thought, and that was a real eye opener for me. I thought, I see.
Yeah.
Yes, of course. Because that stage performance shot in close up on a big screen, he'd look like a lunatic. And you have to be aware of that. And I'm sure there's a million other little things you have.
Yeah, I remember I was directing a sitcom that starred Nathan Lane.
Mm-hmm.
And Nathan was so used to the stage.
Yeah.
That his performance was very big, and it was difficult for me because I'm going, kind of, how do I tell Nathan Lane? The guy has Tony Awards,
yeah.
The guy's been directed by Mike Nichols. How do I tell Nathan Lane, dial it back a little bit, you know, the cameras are going to be right over here.
Yeah.
I know, it is a different animal. How important is the voice itself?
It depends on which area of the business you're going for. If you're going to do movie trailers, you have to have what I call the obscene phone call voice these days. You know, coming soon to a theater near you. What are you wearing? you know, there's, and of course, Don LaFontaine, I don't know if people remember him, but he pretty much owned it for a while.
In a world.
And he, yeah, exactly, that's the guy. And he was very talented and very, very good at what he did. But if he had not had that extraordinary voice, he simply would not have had that career. No matter how good his read was. But then you get into, like, other products that you're selling, and they want an every man or every woman sound.
So a guy who, fine. They're perfectly fine with that.
And, of course, if you're going to work animation, there.
You have to be versatile with your voice.
You got to be able to go high, and you got to be able to go low, and everything in between.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll you know, certain jobs where they say, "Well, we want the inner world guy." I go, "Why did you call me?"
Mm-hmm.
You know, but as I say, it just depends on what the project is. But it is not mandatory.
Okay, so there's a chance for me to sell Taco Bell.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
All you got to do is beat out those 500 other guys.
That's right. No problem. Which brings me to rejection. You audition over and over and over again. How do you deal with what is constant rejection, even in a successful career? It's kind of like, you know, the ball player mm-hmm. that hits 300 and he makes out 70% of the time.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that? Because it's constant.
Well, you just, the best advice I ever got, I can't remember who told me this, but it was wonderful advice. He or she said, do the audition as if it's a job and then forget about it as quickly as possible. Because if you sit around and obsess over these things, you'll drive yourself crazy. In the book, I mentioned that I kept records pretty much my whole voiceover career, just calendars that I would write on. But I could mm-hmm. go back and I could see how things were going. When I was absolutely red hot, the best part of my career, I would average one job for every 11 auditions.
Wow.
And that's the best, that's as good as it ever got.
Mm-hmm.
And I have had periods where I've gone over 100 auditions without booking a job. And it's hard not to beat up on yourself.
Yeah. So, also, is it difficult? You audition for something, you don't get it. Then you see the commercial on TV and you go, really? That's the guy they used?
Well, you know how
really?
how many voice artists it takes to change a light bulb?
No.
One. The other 11 stand around going, why did they pick him? I could do that. You know, what happens to me is...
Do you get bitter?
Oh, you try. Not too much. I'll be sitting watching television and I haven't gotten to the remote yet, so the sound is up on the commercial.
Right.
And I'll suddenly think, oh my God, I'm psychic. I know what he's going to say next. It's deja vu. And I'll suddenly realize, oh, I read for that 3 months ago. And I obviously didn't get it.
Right. And you never hear why or anything. You just,
you
get a call saying you booked it. Otherwise, nothing. So you don't know whether they said, I didn't like his reading. I didn't like his voice. He talks too fast. Or tired of using him. He sounds too much like this guy. You have no idea when you don't book why.
Not a clue. There's never any feedback. It's why would they bother? And I've been told by people who've been in those meetings, it's like lawmaking and sausage making. You don't want to be there. Sometimes the decisions are so irrational. I have talked to people who run casting services, and I've said, do the buyers end up picking the person you would have picked? And she, on a couple of occasions, they've said to me, no, absolutely not. In a lot of cases, they picked the worst person, somebody we weren't even going to send because we thought they were so bad, and that's who they want.
Uh-huh.
So it really is no reflection on you. But it's hard not to take it personally. As I said, you look at the calendar, you go, my God, I've done 100 auditions and nothing. What's going on here?
So you audition for something you don't hear, and all of a sudden, 2 months later, you book the gig, and you go in, and you go, what did I do for this particular audition that they liked?
I have developed a pretty good amnesia when it comes to auditions. Either that or my brain is going sour on me. But lately, I will get a call or an email, hey, you booked the blah, 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 and I'll go, the what? did I read for that? Yeah, don't you remember? No, it's all gone. And you just hope the hell that they've brought the audition with them, the buyers, and they can play it for you.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, yeah, that, I remember now, I remember. But sometimes they don't. And it's,
remember that wonderful read you did 6 months ago? Duplicate that.
Do you have it?
Well, no. Don't you have it up there in your head?
No, I don't.
Yeah, and you've done 450 things since.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you got to do the Academy Awards. Wow. How did that come about?
That was just a wonderful thing that fell out of the sky. The I guess they were looking for a male voice because they it was actually a two-person announcing team that year, and they kept Randy Thomas, who had already done it for, I think, 5 years running. And they were looking for a fella to pair her up with, and I was invited to audition for the job, and I went, and I thought, you know, this is going to be one of the many, many occasions where I won't hear back.
Right.
And then they said, well, you made the call back, which is sort of like a runoff in an election. You know, it's down to five or six people.
Okay.
Or as I say, it's down to me and the guy they're actually going to pick.
You sure you're not Jewish?
I may be. Anyway, I showed up to do this, and the guy who was going to direct the show, this remarkable, fascinating, colorful guy named Louis J. Horvitz, he was running the audition, and he said, what I'm going to try to do is duplicate what's going to happen the night of the show. You're going to have to make an announce with me screaming in the headphones. Not at you. I'm screaming at camera guys, but you can't let it distract you. So I'm in there reading, it's the Golden Jubilee of Oscar, the 75th celebration. And in the phones, I'm hearing Louis J. going, camera one, give me a shot of Meryl Streep. Camera two, get the podium. Where's camera three? You know, and somehow I got through it. And I thanked him, and then he said, wait a minute, I know you, and you'll like this story. He says, you used to work with Bob. Bob? Who's Bob, you know? And he said, you know, at the radio station, KMPC. And I thought, oh, he's talking about Robert.
Robert W. Morgan.
W. Morgan, mm-hmm. who you didn't call Bob, as I understand
yes,
it.
Yes,
you got
you
into
did
trouble
not.
For that.
Yeah,
once,
he almost beat
you?
Me up. Yeah.
But apparently, Louis.
He was not on roller skates either.
Apparently, Louis J. Horvitz gets to call him Bob. And Bob had worked for Louis J. on a show called Solid Gold. And Louis J. had listened to KMPC on and off since he was a kid. And he remembered me when I followed Robert W. Morgan. So he said, you have a radio background. You've been live. This will help. And it turned out I understood what he meant later on when I did the job.
Yeah.
Because most voiceover people have never been live unless
right.
they were in the radio business. You know, you roll in, and oh, I might nail this on take seven.
Right.
Well, not when you're live. You nail it on take one.
How terrifying was that?
It was probably... One of the most frightening things that's ever happened to me. That last half hour before we went on the air was just torture. You just sit there picturing every damn fool thing you can screw up, and it's going to happen worldwide.
Yeah. In 40, 50 million people.
In front of an audience of the cream of Hollywood.
Right.
They're all sitting there.
Right.
And you just think, how the hell did I get into this situation? And thank God we got through it. I don't think we fouled anything up that I'm aware of.
Uh-huh.
But boy, I'll tell you, it's as I said, it was one of the most frightening things that's ever happened to me.
So where is the announcer's booth? Huh? Are you like in a little closet somewhere? Where are you?
Well, you picture all kinds of things in your mind when you say the announcer for the Academy Awards.
Yeah.
And you picture yourself in a tuxedo, perhaps just off stage or in some magnificent sound studio somewhere.
Uh-huh.
We were in an improvised announce booth that they had built into the back of a sound truck that was in the parking lot adjacent to what was then the Kodak Theater.
Uh-huh.
We were not actually,
so you weren't even in the theater.
We were not in the theater.
Right.
We had TV monitors. We could see whatever was going on the air.
Right.
But no, we were we were so far from any of the restrooms that they had put porta potties out. Because we were not the only people back there. There were the satellite people and I don't know who all. There were a number of vehicles and parked there and a number of people. So we had these four porta potties for our convenience. And my wife, a couple of days in, said, so what's it like working the Academy Awards? I said, it's like camping with the movie stars thrown in.
So let's talk a little bit about the book, Vocal Recall, Life in Radio and Voiceovers. What prompted you to write the book?
Well, I did an appearance. There's a wonderfully, wonderfully talented guy named Rob Paulsen. He's probably best known for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or the Animaniacs. He was in both of those shows. And he does a podcast called Talkin' Tunes, and sometimes he takes it on the road. Tunes, T-O-O-N-S. Sometimes he takes it on the road. So he wanted to do a night saluting the show Transformers at the Improv. And he asked me if I would do it, and I said, the Improv? Like, I'm no comedian. I can't do jokes.
Right.
No, no, it'll be fine. And I showed up, and boy, I had a wonderful time because it was filled with fans of the show. And anything, you know, any little story I could tell, they just loved it. I said, boy, that was fun. And I thought, maybe if I wrote a monologue, half hour, something like that, and then a half hour Q&A, and I could book an hour somewhere. And so I start writing this monologue. And at a certain point, I realized, this ain't no monologue. This is becoming a book. Mm-hmm. And then it was, could I actually write a book? Which I never thought I could. But
well, you did. And yeah, it's a really fun book, too.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I hope so. Yeah. I didn't want to, then I did this, then I did that. Because I've read so many of those, and it's so annoying. It's not what you did, but how you did it and what happened when you did it to me is what makes it interesting.
Right. And you talk about the ups and downs. It's mm-hmm. not a book that just, you know, glorifies yourself. And then I went to Coral and had the greatest ratings there ever, and they didn't appreciate me. And then I went to KMPC. I saved that radio station. A lot of these kind of books are. But yours is not. You're pretty candid and honest about the ups and the downs.
Yeah, well, because in my case, it was a lot of downs. It's mm-hmm. An old friend of mine who had a wonderful radio career, I remember him saying to me at a certain point, I was telling him what was going on with me, and he just said, you have the worst luck of anybody I know. And shortly after he said that, things started to turn around for me. But boy, it seemed there was a period there where I just couldn't make a right move. And well, as the bard says, there's a tide in the affairs of men, and the tide was not turning in my direction at that point. But.
Yeah. Those cabs were driving by, and you were thinking, oh, man. Oh, man. Do I need to get my medallion again?
Yeah. Looking back, I'm so grateful to the younger me for making the decision to do voiceovers and following through on it. Because if I'd stayed in radio, the end of my story, I think, would have been very, very unhappy.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Once deregulation happened in the 90s, the business we knew, not that it was that great to start with,
right.
but it went away. And
yeah.
What replaced it was just ridiculous.
We actually be driving cabs.
I would, I know.
Well, this is great. The book, again, is called Vocal Recall, Life in Radio and Voiceovers. Neil, this was great. Let's do this again.
May I give the boys and girls the internet address?
Oh, you should they, absolutely may.
Should they be curious about the book, there's a website. You can actually download a PDF of the table of contents in the first five chapters to discern whether or not I can write. And that's www.neilbook.com, NEILbook.com.
Now, are you going to do the audiobook, and are you going to actually voice it, or, you know, are you going to let me voice it for you?
Well, I wish I'd known you were available, but it's already done by me, although I won a highly competitive audition to get that job. I was totally impartial. It's available in print, it's Kindle, it's PDF, it's audio. If there's some other format I'm not aware of, I'll record it in that.
Yeah, he'll come and read it for you live.
Actually,
he'll sit in the back seat.
I will read to you in bed, the entire book. It's $1 million, but I only need one customer.
Yeah, well, it's a fairly long book, though, so... You know, you're going to have to be there at least three or four nights.
That's all right.
That's okay. For $1 million, you're a
chap. Just have the check ready.
Thanks very much, Neil.
Thank you, Ken. I very much appreciate it.
I'd plug the book again, but that would be overkill. Thanks so much to Neil Ross, also to Adam and Susie Meister-Butler, and to Howard Hoffman. Should you wish to get in touch with me, and I will write you back, my email address is hollywoodlevine@outlook.com. Once again, that's hollywoodlevine@outlook.com. Follow me on Twitter, won't you? At Ken Levine. I'm also on Instagram, Hollywood and Levine. And I would sure love a 5-star or even a 10-star review. It would just make me very happy. That'll do it for this week. Back with more next week. Thanks so much for listening. I will talk to you then. Bye-bye.